Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Beatles fans, or whatever time it is that you're going to be watching the show.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Jim Barrow? Barrowzow.
It is Jim
Barrowzow. We're on the air and we're recording, Jim. Sorry I didn't catch you. You know, your email just reminded me. I'm sorry. I'm going to edit this all out right now, what we're doing. So I apologize. I took a nap.
That's quite all right, yeah. That's what my high school girlfriends used to tell me when I'd come by to pick them up. They wouldn't answer the door, and they'd call me later and say, "I'm sorry, I took a nap." And, no, just kidding. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll get right into it. When you hear a woman counting down the seconds to the end of the show, please ignore her because it doesn't matter. We can continue to talk. Okay. And everything.
Sure.
So there's nothing else. So I'm gonna start over on my little speech here because I, you know, my opening speech. Okay, and then I'll just start right in.
Well,
as I said, I'll edit out this part for you.
So you're saying we're live, but we're not live.
We're recording.
Okay.
This is recording
that's
right now.
So usually
I call 10 minutes early and then it counts down and it tells you when it's going to start recording at exactly 4 o'clock. Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Because you can edit out the part about the high school girlfriends too. That's probably not
so. No. I'm going to take that clip and I'm going to keep replaying it and then I'm going to make a copy of it. And I'm going to put it online.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
send it to Terry too and he'll
wall.
Find. Yeah. Yeah. That's okay.
Okay. Welcome back, Beatles fans, to episode 42 of I Saw the Beatles. This week's special guest is Jim Barrowzow. I hope I got that right. Jim saw the Beatles in 1966 in St. Louis. So let's hear his story from a guy. We've had a lot of girls on the show the past couple of weeks, so it's time to get the guy's opinion again. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I am doing just great. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm wide awake now.
Good.
All napped and ready for a great story from you. So how old were you when the Beatles came around, when you first discovered them?
Yeah, well, I was in seventh grade. The second half of the the first half of my seventh grade year was 1963, and the radio started playing Beatles songs, and didn't think too much about it. We kind of liked the sound of it, me and my buddies. And then, you know, when 64 rolled around and they were on the Ed Sullivan Show, everyone immediately, at least all the boys started growing their hair long, because back then it was like short haircuts. For me in particular, my hair started growing, couldn't grow fast enough, but we all grew what we could that our parents would allow. But my parents were pretty easygoing, so I ended up with a Beatles haircut. They even bought me Beatle boots, and then I had to play air guitar for a while until they actually bought me a guitar, and that was the start of it right there.
Wow.
And so I was 12 years. I was about 12 years old. 13.
So at 12, though, boys, you know, I guess this wasn't for the girls. It was just for the cool factor back then?
No, it was for the girls, too. When I'm watching Ed Sullivan and you see the reaction of the girls in the audience, you're thinking, you know, it's kind of like what John Lennon said when he said he watched Elvis on the big screen. He's going like, he's watching Elvis sing and wiggle around on stage and all the girls are reacting. He's going like, you know, that's not a bad career. And I think, and I think the boys at that time, you know, we're in junior high now. We certainly are noticing the girls. And I only had one little small moment of confusion. About the same time, Sean Connery came out as James Bond. And so there was a moment where I wasn't quite sure if I, you know, wanted to be one of the Beatles or if I wanted a License to Kill. And so it ended up being, I was confused for a while, but once I got the guitar in my hands, my direction went straight toward music.
I guess you weren't, my thought is, you know, I guess you weren't that, no longer that 5-year-old boy watching the trash truck go by thinking, I want to do that. I want to ride the trash truck.
Yeah, you know? I never did have that phase, but
a lot of little boys go through that. They see that guy riding on the back of that truck and they think, you know, that or a fireman because they see the truck.
No, I was, it was baseball. I lived in the St. Louis area at the time. Mm-hmm. And, it was St. Louis Cardinals or basketball, and the St. Louis Hawks were in town at that time, or football Cardinals. So, no, it was more sports with me. And I had a buddy that had a guitar in the 7th grade, and one of the first things he showed me was a song by the Shantays called Pipeline. And he taught me that little run at the beginning and the little licks, and I kind of picked it out myself. And then it was just shortly after that that the Beatles hit, and I kind of flipped over to that genre of music.
Mm-hmm. So how old were you when you got your guitar?
It was my end of my 7th grade year, and my parents...
Okay, just in time, yeah.
Yeah, so I started getting a little bit of talent, but I was self-taught, and... I remember performing for my 8th grade class, music class.
Mm-hmm.
I performed a song called Ghost Riders in the Sky. I have no idea where that song came from. I think it was from Avengers album that I heard, and I could pick it out myself. So that was my first performance with a guitar. And when I
Were
got
you
into...
Were you self-taught, or did you have lessons?
No, I was self-taught completely.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was harder back then because today you have YouTube and you can learn just about anything on YouTube. As a matter of fact, I still use YouTube to go like, you know, I wonder how that's played. But when I got to be a freshman in high school, there were a group of sophomores had formed a band and they needed another guitarist. They needed a lead guitar player. And these sophomores asked this low freshman to be in their band. And I was pretty impressed. I was impressing other, at least in my mind, I was impressing other
people.
Wow,
you were the George Harrison of the band.
I was. And as a matter of fact, I didn't think, you know, your first time you ever made that connection. I was the youngest and I played lead guitar. And
I got one of those minds that thinks like that.
That's great. I ended up meeting George's sister, and that'll be saved for later, but she wanted to sign my guitar, and I'll save that story for when we can work it in. But this high school band, we got pretty tight and got good. We played for just a lot of things, and so it was just that was the start of my music quote profession. I never played professionally, but was always in a band and starting in high school. So our acquaintance, Terry Crane, and I were in a band for about 10 years together. And so I can tell you a little bit about that later also.
Okay. So you're in a band first year of high school, and, you know, the Beatles came on tour, you know, 64, 65. Mm-hmm. What was stopping you from going to see them then? You didn't see them till 66.
They didn't come to St. Louis until 66. St. Louis is considered a small cow town compared to New York or Los Angeles. So we're in the middle of the country there, and certainly we're not Chicago either. I think the Beatles were in Chicago prior to 66. So I had to wait till 66, and the radio station that played Beatles music then was a station called KXOK, and they had a DJ there by the name of Johnny Rabbit and others, But that's how really I became familiar with the Beatles, and they finally made it in 66. It was, I believe, August the 21st, 1966.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to go right into the experience there? Because
Sure.
You know,
well, I'd like to know, well, first, well, let me back up for a second. I mean, were you hoping to see the Beatles, you know, in 64 and 65? They're touring around. I mean, I don't get a lot of men, you know, on my show. So it's always nice to see, to hear about what they were thinking at the time. I mean, obviously you went for the haircut and the boots, and I hear from the guys that the boots were a big thing, and the, a lot of them had
yes.
to hide them from their parents, you know.
Yeah. My mom took me to buy my pair of boots.
Okay. So I mean, did you sit back and think, wow, when are they coming to St. Louis, or, you know, why can't I go to Chicago and see them, or anything like that? Or was it just, you know, sit and wait when they, you know, finally announced
you know,
it?
I don't ever recall having those feelings of, I wish they would come here because I've just got to see them. I think what happened, being by this time I'm 14 or so when I'm in the band in high school, and I think the feelings I had was I'm in my own little world there. School was always relatively easy for me, so I can
mm-hmm.
invest a lot of time with my buddies playing music, and I was also really heavy into tennis and at that time. So between those two activities, tennis and guitar and performing, I really didn't worry too much about seeing the Beatles. It was almost like I was a Beatle playing in a band, and I was getting my fix that way. It wasn't until they started advertising on KXOK that the Beatles were going to come to town. And I think they were sponsored by a company called Styx, Bayer and Fuller. It was kind of like a big department type store.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also 7-Up sponsored them or something like that. But I talked to my parents about it, and my mom goes, yeah, sure. So they sent off for tickets. We took my brother, myself, my brother's a year younger than me, and we took the drummer in my high school band. At that time I was a sophomore, and the three of us went up there. My parents took us up.
Mm-hmm.
And dropped us off at Busch Stadium is where we were. And I took the privilege of getting onto your site, your
mm-hmm.
Beatle Freaks site, and
mm-hmm.
because I was going like, well, how long is this interview going to be, and what kind of questions
mm-hmm.
do you ask? And I did notice that a couple of people had the same price tickets that I had. They were about $5.50, something
mm-hmm.
like that. And they were front row.
Yeah.
They were front row seats.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You got front row.
I was within the first. They were field bots. It was in Busch Stadium, and so
mm-hmm.
It was probably the first three rows. I mean, you're right there on the field.
Right.
Stage was set up. Yeah, the stage was set up between first base and second.
Uh huh.
So you know, it's not like you can reach out and touch them, but you're pretty close.
Pretty closer than the people up there in those nosebleed seats, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so, because I've had a number of nosebleed guests on talking about being all the way up there at the very top.
My experience is a little different. Yeah, my experience was different simply because on that particular night, on
mm-hmm.
August the 21st, it had been raining all day long. And
mm-hmm.
when we got to our seats, it was still drizzling. And we found out later that, and I think there were less than 30,000 people at Busch Stadium. That stadium held about 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
But it was simply because of the rain, and the weather was poor. So they had about, I can't quite remember, it was in the upper 20s, perhaps, 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember reading later that John Lennon did not want to perform. He wanted to cancel because he was afraid he would get electrocuted on the stage. And in reality, back
mm-hmm.
in those days, the equipment on a stage that's wet had a leaky roof, and who knows what could have happened. But he probably wasn't too far off on his concerns.
Right.
And the second thing I remember is that we could hear every song. because the crowd wasn't as big. And we were right up front anyway. So we pretty much heard every song. I know when I read a lot of reviews, a lot of the fans say that they couldn't hear the songs because of all the screaming. So it wasn't a sold out house. It might have been sold out. There wasn't a sold out crowd there. And that allowed me to hear pretty much everything they were singing, even though it was through some pretty poor speakers in a PA system. But it was more back then of, hey, look, it's the Beatles, and I'm actually seeing them. And we weren't worried that much about the quality of the sound.
And for it to be coming through the PA system in 1966 mm-hmm. was a big deal. I mean, you know, who would have expected mm-hmm. it to be what it is today? You know, where it's, you know, you can blow out your eardrums in the third row of a concert in a venue. So, you know, are you guys playing it cool? Are you just sitting back with your feet up on the seats in front of you? Are you standing up and cheering, screaming? I mean, how are you reacting to these Beatles while they're playing?
Well, no, I think because we could hear everything and because at that time I was a beginner musician, mm-hmm. I was interested in just listening to the vocals and just, you know, I was trying to take note of every little detail of the Beatles themselves, you know, and what are they wearing? And I remember seeing McCartney's bass and I think at that time they were, most of the guitar parts were played on Epiphones. John and George had matching Epiphones, but mm-hmm. also George had his Rickenbacker there, and just looking at Ringo's drum set, and it was just, you know, it was just kind of a special time at that point. So I was in particular just trying to listen, and you know, one of the songs I do remember is where they start off with Nowhere Man, just the harmony at the beginning, and I also remember. And I hope I don't have this wrong, but Paperback Writer stands out in my mind because I liked that song. And I believe that song was released in the summer of 66 or early on in 66. And that was one of the mm-hmm. songs they performed. I thought, oh, this is really cool. They're playing stuff I actually, you know, have been listening to just recently. So it was an experience that I didn't jump up and scream and hoot and holler. And I don't think most of the guys did that I knew of. My brother didn't. Our drummer didn't. We were just kind of like, hey, this is cool. We're seeing the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. So was your band, I mean, was it a cover band or was it originals?
Yeah. Every band I've been in has been a cover band, and people ask me if I write my own songs. I'm like, well, yeah. But I said, what would you rather hear, something by Lennon and McCartney or something by Barrisole? And they're like, yeah, okay, good point. So, no, we always a cover band, and do I have time? You can cut this out if you want.
Just keep talking. We're doing okay.
Okay, so I substitute teach. I was a teacher, and then I became a principal. When I retired, I moved to Boise, Idaho area, and there's a high schools here, and they always call me because I have this experience in education and they want people like me in their schools as substitutes. Well, one high school keeps calling me back and back and back, and they look at me as one of their faculty members. But every time I'm there, if we have a couple of minutes left over before the classes, the kids always ask me because they know I play guitar, play something. And I'm going, yeah, okay. I said, what do you want me to play? And for some reason, they are always requesting Love Potion number 9. And last year I said, you know what, every time I'm tired of doing this song, I'm going to play you a song that I wrote, but I need your help. And they went, oh, okay. Well, now you're going to know and your listeners are going to know already when I describe this, where I'm going with this. But I said, students, during part of the song, I'm going to be singing Hold Me and I Want You to Clap Twice. Love Me, and I Want You to Clap Twice. And they went, okay. So I started playing and singing 8 days a week. And when we got to the bridge, they would clap, and this was like great. And I got done with the song, and they all looked at me and said, you know, that's not really too bad. And I said, well, it ought to be pretty good. And Lennon and McCartney wrote it to the Beatles, and they just looked at me and went, Bears, how you're pathetic. So, but I
funny,
think that
how could you, you know, we're of the opinion, how could you not know the song?
Well,
you know?
You know what? I was lucky because most of the students in there are really big Beatle fans. This was a international baccalaureate school, so they're kind of, pardon me, if anybody from Renaissance High School hears this, but they're kind of eggheads. So, but they'll walk around with the Beatles shirts on, and some of them would have known the song, but I was lucky that I had this particular class. Had no clue that Jim Barrasso didn't write 8 days a week. So, but that just proves my point. Do you want to hear Linda McCartney, or do you want to hear some song I came up with, you know, singing in the shower? I don't think so.
Oh, wow. So, you know, was as a young guy when the Beatles, you know, how were you feeling as the different albums were coming out, each one, as, you know, Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's, and, you know, as they were changing along the way? I mean, the girls were getting upset, or they were getting married, or blah, blah, blah. I guess I'll ask you, I know you weren't upset about them getting married. You're probably relieved as a guy, like, finally, maybe this will end the hysteria and the girls look at me, you know, kind of thing. But
no, you know, first of all, I didn't know John Lennon was married. But, you know, the big rumor early on was, were the Beatles bald or not? Was this a real hair? And, you know, I can remember like going, huh, because I used to collect the bubblegum card versions, you know, the little Beatle cards.
Right.
And so I can remember looking at some of their pictures, seeing the back of her head going, you know what, that looks like real hair to me. I don't know what everybody's talking about. So, you know, that crisis was over with in about 2 seconds with me. As far as them being married, it didn't really affect me that much. Didn't bother me whether they were married or not. I kind of liked the idea, and I hate to say this, but I kind of liked the idea that they weren't married, because that's the situation I was in, of course. I'm in high school.
Right. You
I'm
want,
not married.
You want to be like them, so as long as they're
yes.
not married. Yeah. You know, and you want, they're
yeah,
heroes,
you know.
You know?
Well, yeah, and, you know, if you're married, you really shouldn't have 10,000 girls chasing down the street, and that's, mm-hmm. that was my mind view, but it's kind of cool. They're not married. You know, they can they can do what they want to do and have fun, and this is the life of a bachelor. And so it didn't really bother me one way or the other if they were married or not married. And as they got older and as I got older, as they all found a wife and got married and eventually started going their own way, you know, I just kind of looked at it as that's life. You know, what would you expect? They gave us 10 years of
right.
a lot of joy here, and that's kind of the way I looked at it.
Yeah, how about the evolution of the albums? Were you at any point, you know, was there, you know, oh, this album, you know, where what are they doing, you know? Did you ever just...
No.
Yeah. You
I was enamored.
Like...
Yeah, I'm a Beatles fan. You know, there were some songs I didn't care for. I thought, well, that's not, you know, an easy one to throw out is Number 9. You know, I'm like, okay, I think I might have listened to that once. But most of the stuff I really liked, I just, you know, I liked the way they progressed. I will be honest with you, if somebody said you're stuck on an island and you can only listen to you know, early, middle, or late Beatles, what would it be? And it would, without a doubt, be early Beatles. I love the catchy phrasing. I love the music, and I love the concept of these are just love songs. How can you not like them? They're all basically love songs. And that's you know, the first time I heard them, I Want to Hold Your Hand and She Loves You and all of these, and I just fell in love with those, and they are the foundation of why I began liking the Beatles. Now, the later albums, you know, Abbey Road, I absolutely love that also. So I liked the progression, and I think, you know, as Beatle fans mature, we matured right along with the Beatles and learned to progress right along with the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you said what was it you were what kind of teacher were you? What was your major in school?
I have a kind of a crazy major. I have government history with science.
Really?
I also taught science. I taught government history. Yeah.
Okay, because I wanted to know what kind of teacher is sitting there playing songs for their students. I mean, you know.
Well,
you know.
A Beatles fan teacher. Yeah, anyone
right.
that's a Beatles fan. Early on in my career, I always had a guitar. Even when I was a teacher, I had a guitar in my room. And at noontime, I would be playing songs. I'd be playing Beatles songs, and the kids would want to come in and have lunch in my room. And they just, mm-hmm. they'd generally sit on one side of the room so they could sit there and chit-chat, but they'd listen to me play. And even as a principal, I had a guitar in my office simply because you spend a long day in the office. You get there early in the morning, and you don't leave till late at night. And so when I would have a break, I'd just go like, okay, I'm shutting my door. Don't anybody bother me. I'm going to relax for a few minutes. So that was my philosophy of trying to survive through a long career.
Just, yeah, time to zone out, go into your own little zone.
Yeah, absolutely.
With music.
As a principal of a school, I was a principal of a school that had about 750 students. It was a K-8 school. And the teachers would give me a call and be like, hey, you know, I've been telling my students if they meet this goal or that goal or if they're well-behaved, we would have the principal come down and give them a little mini concert. And I, you know, you really had to twist my arm very much to get me to do that. So I would do that. You know, so part of my job as a principal is go down and give concerts to the first graders or whatever it might be. I tried to combine my career with my hobbies and my interests, mm-hmm. and it's kept me sane all these years.
So you talk about your bands and how you were in your first band at 14. What was the name of the band?
Well, okay. This is going to get edgy.
And were you doing Beatles covers?
Yes, we did. We did do some Beatles covers. It was like Twist mm-hmm. and Shout. It was some of the easier mm-hmm. stuff. The name of our band, we started off with The Knights, and I think we realized somewhere along the way there was already a band, you know, like The Shadow of Knights. And so I got out a map of England, and mm-hmm. I was, because we were like British invasion stuff, you know, so I'm mm-hmm. looking at a map of England, and I see this region of England called Essex, and I thought, mm-hmm. the Essex, that's kind of that's cool sounding. Plus, mm-hmm. and if you have little kids in the room, it's time to cover their ears. Plus, it had the word sex in it. So I thought that was pretty edgy, the Essex. And
right, there you go.
The Essex. Yeah, there we go. That's pathetic, yeah, I know, but I was in high school.
Yeah, that's a high school boy for you.
There you go. There you go.
Not to say the girls wouldn't do it, you know, nowadays.
They wouldn't have known. No one even noticed it. It was just me, and I mentioned to the band guys. They're like, yeah, that's cool. They didn't really care all that much. It was my job to pick a new name, and we did. And that's where we went with it. So that's how we
right.
ended up with
I mean,
the Essex.
You know, it pretty much sounds like the story of why the Bare Naked Ladies called themselves the Bare Naked Ladies, because, you know, that's what they said.
Now, the other band I was in with Terry, we started off calling ourselves Union Jack. And, mm-hmm. again, we were kind of a cover band. I think our lead singer would come out and say, you know, we play all this British invasion music of people that are dead or should be dead. And, you know, like, so we would do stuff like that. We eventually started playing a lot more 50s and, just 50s and 60s combined. So we changed our name from Union Jack to Johnny Velvet and the Velours. And, Yeah, Johnny Vel and we
did
were
Johnny
snappy
Velvet
dressers.
And Velvet have costumes?
We had white. We wore, of course. We wore white jackets, ties, white shirts, ties, black pants, black shoes. I wore Beetle. I still had some Beetle boots that I wore. And we were pretty snazzy looking. We played mostly for All of us worked at John A. Logan College in Carterville, Illinois, and Terry was an administrator there. Our lead singer Bob Fester, he was Johnny Velvet, was a faculty. He was an advisor there, and he also taught there. And then the other members of the band worked there also. And I was principal at the time still, but I was a term faculty member. I taught class there in the evening. And so
was it an educator's band? Is this a bunch of teachers you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we all had our master's degree, but we claimed at some point that we were the smartest or most educated band in the country. And then later I find out there's some band somewhere that all the members had their PhDs, so we got knocked off of that make-believe perch that we had. Now, the one story that I want to tell you about Johnny Velvet is we performed for a Beatles, a Beatles celebration of some kind. It was there at the college, and they invited Louise Harrison, was there, George's sister, and she lived in the area at the time. And I, being such a fanatical Beatles fan, I had a Rickenbacker guitar that was just like George Harrison's, and I had a Vox amplifier, it was called an AC-30. And anyhow, I played all the lead parts to the Beatles songs that we played. And so after the concert, and who plays the lead for the Beatles? George. So after the concert, Louise comes backstage and she's talking to us, and she looks at me and goes, "You know, you sounded really good. Your band is wonderful, but you know, since you played all of George's parts, if you would like, I would love to sign your guitar." And I had to be polite. It's an expensive guitar, and I had to be polite. And I was thinking, like, well, you know. Instantly through my brain, I thought, look, you're Louise Harrison. If you were George Harrison, I'd let you sign it, but not Louise Harrison. So I politely declined because I mean, if she signed it, I have to use my guitar anyway to play in gigs, and it would smear. But I think if George Harrison were alive at that time and he signed my guitar, it'd be hanging up on my wall right now, but not Louise Harrison. As nice as she is.
Yes, she is. She's very sweet, and I was just talking about her on another episode and the fact that she's turning 90 this year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's still...
Yeah, we met her in St. Louis. There were three of us, Bob Fester, Johnny Velvet, Terry and I were going to go up to see Chuck Berry somewhere around his 70th birthday or something like that. And he owned a restaurant called Blueberry Hill in St. Louis. And then I think once a month he would go downstairs below the restaurant. He had a stage down there, and you'd go and buy tickets, and you'd just pull up a chair. I remember the three of us went down there to see Chuck Berry, and we're standing in line. The line had to be 100 yards long, but we were like right up front by the door waiting to get in. And we had a little bit of a Beatlemania moment. Someone from way back in the crowd went, "Hey, look, it's Johnny Velvet and the Velours." And we turn around and smile at each other and gave a little wave. So it wasn't quite Beatlemania. It wasn't Johnny Velour mania, but it was close. So we'll take that.
What year was this?
I was in the band with those guys from 1995 to 2004. So it was maybe around 2000.
You had to have been pretty big in that area then.
Well, if only one person in that line yelled out, "Hey, it's Johnny Velvet and the Velours," we weren't that big, but people knew us.
A lot of times there's within a city or a region, a band that everybody knows. You always know the big local band, whether they make it big or not.
We were in St. Louis getting ready to see Chuck Berry. I think what happened, we were well known in Southern Illinois, so I mean, we were a popular band in Southern Illinois. I will say I remember one time we were playing for a college event, and we were going to be the third band on stage, and it was for a college crowd. And I remember we were sitting there, we were going to just sit there and wait our turn. But I remember the first band came on, and they played, and Johnny Velvet looks at me and goes, "These guys, you know, no one's dancing, no one's doing anything." Second band comes up, same thing. And right when they're taking their stuff down, he looks at me and goes like, "We're going to make this place rock." And we did. So it was fun being, it was just one of those experiences that, you know, meeting Terry and meeting Bob and having 10 years together with them. We traveled up to Chicago a lot to go see the Fest for Beatle fans. It was originally called Beatle Fest, and I think the Beatles or someone, Apple, threatened to sue them if they didn't change.
Apple.
So they had to change it from the Beatle Fest to the Fest for Beatle fans.
Mm-hmm.
And we went up there, the three of us, a lot, many, many years in a row, where we met, you know, we met Pete Best and just, you know, anyone that was associated with the Beatles. I'm sure you have a Fest for Beatle fans out there in New Jersey, I think, also, or somewhere around.
Yeah, but they'd like to call it the New York Metro. It's in North Jersey, near the refineries.
Okay.
But yeah.
There is one story I have to tell you about Terry. Mm-hmm. Terry and I, after we went up there one year, and we get to Chicago, and Klaus Voormann was going to be there. And so we would always look at, we always go like, okay, who do we want our picture with and get his autograph? Well, Klaus Voormann, you got to have your picture taken with him, and
right,
you got to get his autograph. So we're standing in line and waiting to go into the room where Klaus is going to be. And there's a bunch of girls. We were like the first two in line. So it was a bunch of girls standing there, and they start talking to us. And they start asking questions, and then I had to drop the line. Well, I saw the Beatles in concert. Well, that did it. They went crazy, and eventually one of them asked for my autograph. And Terry is like shaking his head like, "You got to be kidding me. They're asking, what is going on?" And her rationale for this was that she wanted to get an autograph of a person from every single Beatle concert in America. I'm thinking, well, that's going to be a daunting task. But so this girl asked me for an autograph. Well, within 5 minutes, here comes Klaus Voormann, and he walks in and he looks at me and he takes a double take. He stops and looks at me and goes, "Oh, it's great seeing you again." And he goes over and sits down. And Terry, now he's about to lose it by now, because here girls are asking for my autograph and Klaus Voormann thinks he knows me. And so he's going, "Oh brother, this is too much for me to take." So we had some fun moments there, and that was certainly one of them.
I guess you got to clear it up with Klaus, or did you just let that roll?
No. I went over there. I've got a great picture of him. He's got his arm around me, and he's looking at me like I'm his long-lost brother. It's hilarious. And at that time, he has these, they're like postcards with the Revolver cover on them, since he designed that. And
mm-hmm.
he would like, you know, to Jim from Klaus or Klaus Voormann or however he signed it. But
mm-hmm.
no, I never did tell him I don't have any clue as to who you are. I mean, I knew who he was. He didn't know who I was, but I didn't. I wanted him to at least think he still knew me. I don't know.
Yeah, because it was funny, because the funny thing is that I went onto your Facebook page just to get a look, you know, see what you look like. And, you know, I was looking around because I did a little search to find Beatles, to, you know, find out more information about you and going to see the Beatles. And, you know, kind of also tells me how much of a Beatles fan you are by how much you talk about them on your Facebook page. But I kept looking at your picture and I kept going back,
mm-hmm.
and it was one of these familiar things, right? And I'm like, looking at
mm-hmm.
the picture. Finally, I was like, oh, he looks like Mike Wolff from American
Singers. No, don't say
Singers.
That. Please don't say that. Now, that's when I – are you looking at my profile? My profile picture, I've got short hair, and I'm actually at Crater Lake in Oregon. And I think, you know, that's what I look like now. I was at a Beatle Fest. I don't know which one. I've been to about 20 of them, or not that many Terry has. But I was at a Beatle Fest, and I was down at their where they sell all, you know, all the stuff that you can get, Beatle shirts and so. Mm-hmm. And some guy I have a blue jean jacket with Beatles patches all over it. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my hair was a lot longer, and I had that kind of Mike Wolf haircut. And someone looked at me and goes like, "Hey, you're the guy from the Pickers." And I went, "No, I'm not." But yeah, I've been mistaken for Mike Wolf of American Pickers, if that's who you're referring to.
Maybe that's where Klaus. Maybe he's a fan of the Pickers. I don't.
you know, I think that was actually before the Pickers came out.
you know, when you look at the Pickers, they've actually been around for over 20 seasons. That always surprises me when I look scanning the channels and the shows and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you know, you and your Beatles life has kind of followed you throughout your years. And you know, when you were with Terry and that, did you at
right.
Beatles covers? I know he wrote a book.
Yeah, we did a lot of them. Yes, he wrote a book, and we did a lot of Beatle covers. And as a matter of fact, we would start off each gig with Chuck Berry's slash, but we played the Beatles version of Roll Over Beethoven. So we would always start every gig with Roll Over Beethoven and just get the crowd going. So we played a lot of Beatles songs, and it's quite enjoyable. And now, whenever I substitute teach, I almost exclusively play a Beatles song for the kids, and they seem to like it. But I do have to say, you said you were looking over my Facebook page,
right?
And I don't know what I have on there that relates to the Beatles. However, I will say that when I get around to telling you my Beatle experience in St. Louis, I have cut back on sharing my Beatle experience because I'm going to be a little bit of a different interview. Yep, I have this Beatle experience. I got within about 10 feet of the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll tell you why I don't share it as much as you would think. And so when we get to that point, when you're ready for that, I'll
I'm ready
fill you
for
on
it.
That.
Let's hear it.
Well, so basically it's this, you know, I told you that we had, we were right down on the field to see the Beatles, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they played, I think it was 11 songs, and it was rainy. So usually what they were going to do is, I think they had the Circle was there, I think their hit at the time was Red Rubber Ball.
Mm-hmm.
They had Bobby Hebb was there, I think he sang Sunny. The Ronettes were there, and I don't even remember what was popular at the time when they were out.
Mm-hmm.
And then a backup band called The Remains or something was there, I think. But anyway, so the normal procedure was these bands would come on first, and they, you know, like warm the crowd up, and then the Beatles mm-hmm. would come on. That would be but they did it in reverse because, as I said, it was rainy, and they were afraid it was going to be a big downpour. They brought the Beatles on because the rain had let up and it was just a little
mm-hmm.
bit of a mist, drizzly. So they put the Beatles on.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Beatles were finished playing, it was in Busch Stadium, and you could see through Busch Stadium. And when the Beatles went off and the other band started coming on, I noticed that on the other side of the stadium,
mm-hmm.
there were like 50 police cars over there, and the entire stadium emptied out onto, they just emptied to that side of the stadium. They wanted us to get a close-up of the Beatles. And I looked at my brother and Chuck Roberts, who was with us. I said, you know, we ought to go over there because maybe we'll get a real good view of the Beatles. And my brother goes, nah, because it's going to be too crowded. He goes, let's forget it. I said, yeah, you're right. So we went out the back of the stadium, And Busch Stadium has, like most stadiums, they have these ramps that go down. You know, you kind of circle the outside of the stadium. Well, we were almost off the ramp and onto the street. We were just a couple of feet above the street, above the sidewalk. There was not a soul in sight. And there was a door about probably 10 feet from us. So we're standing there, and we're just kind of looking at the street, waiting for my parents to come and pick us up. Well, what happens is a black limousine pulls up. It was a Cadillac, a big black Cadillac pulls up. And that door that was about 10 feet away from us opens up, and the Beatles walk right out, just right in front of us, just boom, 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 all four of them, walked out, and we're going like, oh, it's the Beatles. And, you know, and there wasn't a soul there, just us. And they got into the car, and, you know, being that age, a sophomore, and I remember I visualized where each of them sat in the car, and and the car took off. It drove, it went straight toward Interstate 70. There was a stoplight there that was red. They ran the stoplight. It went, it was red. They went through a red stoplight, took a left, and went to Lambert Airport. And the next day in the newspaper, it said, the Beatles escape Busch Stadium in two police cars. And we just looked at each other and went, oh, no, they didn't. It was just one black limousine. And so it was kind of a fun little point. So as a matter of fact, I have a book that I bought. It's called Ticket to Ride. And it talks about the summer of 66. And if I recall correctly, it mentions that they were in two police cars. But that was reported by, like, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or something like that. But it was funny. You're like, no, they didn't. Where'd they get that? And so that was our experience. You know,
wait,
was
before you tell why you don't tell it anymore, I want to ask you a couple questions. I mean,
yes.
You know, the silly questions about it, you know, that we who were, you know, barely 2 years old at the time want to know. So, I mean, are you just gobsmacked as they walk out this door? You don't say anything? Are you just, like, choked or what? I mean,
it literally was – no, because they did kind of look around, so I'm sure they didn't look at us. But I mean, I'm sure, you know, in their peripheral vision, they saw – no, when it came out, they were so close, but it was like, whoa. What, you didn't know what to say. It was like we all looked at each other, and it was like, we're all looking. It's not like, hey, look, the Beatles. I think I did say that. I said, hey, look, the Beatles. And and everybody's like, whoa. But there was only like three of us there, and there might have been, I'm sure there's probably somebody else up higher than us that saw, coming down the same route. But there was no one on the street between the door and the street. Probably between the door and the street was a good 30 or 40 yards. So that's why they did what they did. You know, they didn't want to get mobbed by a crowd, and they put all those police cars on the other side of the stadium as a little, draw the crowd, a lure over there. The Beatles are going to come out here. And they came out right by where we were just waiting. And it was kind of a fun little moment. No, we were, it was the cherry on top of the Sunday that we had, because first of all, we were excited. We saw the Beatles in concert. Mm-hmm. We could hear them. But then to have them just walk by us, no interaction between us and them, but to have them that close, it was like, whoa, this is really special. And we were flabbergasted and excited, and that kind of overshadowed the concert for a few days. You know, like, hey, they walk right by us. It was kind of cool.
Right.
But
now
it's
you
not
know
not quite as exciting.
The there's a book about the Beatles in St. Louis, written by Sarah. I'm blanking on her name. I'm sorry, Sarah.
I met her.
And does she get the story right? Because I read the book, but I can't remember. Did she know that, or had she talked to you? Does she know that the Beatles snuck through a different door?
She certainly has to, because I read her. She does have a little paragraph or chapter or a page in there with my
Sarah
interview
Schmidt.
In it.
Okay.
Yeah,
Sarah
and
Schmidt,
I think
name.
I can't even remember where I met. I think I met her in Chicago. I think I can't remember. As a matter of fact, I've forgotten that I'm in that book. she did interview me and talk to me, and I gave her the same story. So I don't remember what she wrote about me, but if she wrote down what I told her, that's the story she should have gotten.
Okay. I didn't know if she did. As I said, I haven't. It was a while, you know, several years ago that I read her and reviewed her book. So I wasn't sure if she had gotten the story straight, because as you said, you know, all the papers and everything. So why have you stopped telling this story?
Well, okay, this is what's going to separate my story from the 41 other interviews that you have done, I think.
Okay.
Years later, I'm a teacher, and a buddy of mine who taught with me, we're at a teacher's meeting someplace, and he's going like, "Hey, see that lady over there?" So, yeah, he goes, "She is a huge Beatles fan. Why don't you tell her during our break, why don't you tell her your story of how you saw him in St. Louis, especially the part about how they walked right by?" I said, "Yeah, okay." So after on our break, he introduces me to her, and she goes, "I hear you're a Beatles fan." I said, "Yeah." She goes, I hear you saw them in St. Louis. So I said, "Yes." So here's what happened, and I told her how we had, you know, front row seats, and then at the end when they walked by us, and she listened to my whole story, and she was like just gazing into my eyes, like, "Oh, this is so cool." And she was so polite. And then when I was done, she goes, "You know, this reminds me of when my husband worked for Capitol Records in Atlanta." And as soon as she said that, it was like somebody hit me with a wet fish in the head. I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be a story. So she goes, "Yeah." I said, "He worked for Capitol Records in Atlanta." She goes, "Yes." And it was his job. Of course, I went with him. We had to go pick the Beatles up at the airport when they came to Atlanta. And I said, you sat in a car with the Beatles?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah." And we had to take him to a party after the concert. We took him to a party afterwards. And then after that, we had to take him back to the airport. And I said, did you get any souvenirs?" She goes, "No, not really. But they did sign all of our albums." And I thought,
oh, my God.
What kind of pathetic story did I tell her? And she got all the Beatles to sign her albums and sat in the car and talked to them. I was like, oh. So I, after that was all over, I said, you know, I'm that's it. I mean, you never know who you're going to talk to. I'm never going to tell my pathetic little story again.
That's not true. You have a great story, though.
Let me finish.
You know,
I'm not done. Oh, I'm not even close to done yet. So I moved to Meridian, Idaho. It's not a suburb of Boise, but there's one street that separates Boise and Meridian. So I'm at a Walmart in Boise, and this was a number of years ago. So I moved here in 2012. So it was sometime after that. The Capitol Record or Apple came out with some kind of a new compilation of Beatles stuff that hadn't previously been heard of. So I'm at Walmart and I find it. And it just came out that day, and I take it up to the checkout. There was no one in the store. I don't know why. And there was a little bitty sweet little old lady behind the counter, and she looks at my CD, and she goes, "Oh, do you like the Beatles?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I love the Beatles." She goes, I said, "Are you a Beatles fan?" She goes, "Oh, I just love the Beatles." And then I had the idea, you know, I'll tell her my story. So I said, "You know, I saw them in concert." She goes, "Oh, you did?" And I said, well, when she answered that way, I had to tell the whole story. And when I got done with, you know, they walked by us, and the next day in the paper it said this. I said, and she goes, "Oh, that's a fabulous story." She goes, "You know, I was the president of the Beatles fan club in San Francisco, and they were there twice. And because I was the president, when they were in town, I got invited to the press conference twice." And she goes, "They had a big table set up. The Beatles are on one side, and I was directly sitting at the table with them on the opposite side." And I'm going, "What? You were across the table?" "Yeah." She goes, "And they had these the group photo of them, And twice when they were there, they all four signed their these pictures for me. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. You got the Beatles autographs. Yeah, all twice. And so we met for coffee at this coffee house here. And she brought her Beatles album, and I took pictures of her picture of the Beatles autograph. So, and I thought, this is too much, because I told the story twice, and here her story again beats my story to a pulp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a guy, so I never learn lessons. Ringo came to town and in Boise, and I get a ticket, and no one went with me, and so I'm outside about 2 hours before the concert, and this hippie guy comes by. He's on a skateboard, and he has a guitar stuck on his back. And he's skateboarding by. I yelled at him. I said, "Hey, what kind of guitar have you got?" And he comes over, and he shows me, and he says, "Oh, play something." So I started playing some Beatles songs, of course. What else am I going to play with Ringo there? And it draws a little bitty crowd. Well, here comes this lady on a walker. She comes over, and she's listening. She goes, "Oh, that's wonderful. This is so nice for a tune-up for Ringo." And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "How long have you been a Beatles fan?" And I decided, you know what? It can't happen. It's not going to happen again. So I told this little lady on a walker my story about St. Louis. And she listened so politely, and she goes, "You know, I grew up in New York. Me and my girlfriend lived in New York. And when the Beatles came to New York, we skipped school. And we went down to their hotel." I'm thinking, oh, boy, here we go. And sure enough, she goes, "We were looking for the Beatles in the hotel." I guess back in those days, they didn't have the security they have now.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes, "We went and we got in an elevator. The elevator stops on a certain floor." And she goes, "George and Ringo got on the elevator." And she said, "We about passed out. Here's George and Ringo in an elevator with us." And she goes, "George," she goes, "her girlfriend is with her." She goes, if you want to cut this part out, you can, but I'll tell you the story she told me. She goes, "My girlfriend was a blonde-headed girl, and she had a really great shape." He goes, "She was really shapely, and George started flirting with her." And Ringo's standing there, and George is flirting with my girlfriend. She goes, "And I got jealous because I didn't like that George was paying attention to her and not to me. So I looked at George, and I said, 'George, what would Patty say about you flirting with?'" She goes, "I start lecturing him about flirting with someone when he's married." And George looks at me. She goes, "George looks at me, and the elevator door opened. He goes, 'Oh, okay, let's go, Ringo. Let's get out of here.'" And they went out the door.
That wasn't their friend anymore.
No. But it was funny. She started lecturing George because he was flirting with her girlfriend. And she goes, they spent the rest of the day looking for Paul and John, but never did find them. So every time I mention this story, somebody just blows my story out of the water. And to me, that makes my story even more enjoyable, because people, when I first tell them my story, they go, "Well, that's pretty cool." But then I tell them the other ones, and they're like, "Well, okay, your story's not that great." So that's going to be my contribution to your website, is that I have a story, but it's not anywhere near some of the stories that other people can tell.
Oh, but it is a great story, and I don't have anything to one up you with. I really don't. I don't have a story. I was two at the time, so I don't have that close encounter with the Beatles that so many people have had. And you know, that's why I do the show, so that I can listen and hear these stories. And I think all the stories are great, and everybody has great experiences. And you know, one thing, it's kind of the one thing I don't care about, and one of the reasons I don't attend a lot of Beatles festivals, not specifically the Beatles fans, because I have been there, is because I don't like the one-upmanship. You know, I don't want to feel like, you know, well, you haven't met them, you haven't gotten an autograph, you haven't, you know. but you know, your story is unique, and it's not like anything else I've heard before, where you got to experience them while everybody else was standing at the other side of a stadium thinking they're escaping in police cars, you know, and they just walk right on by you and everything. So I really appreciate your story, and thank you so much for sharing it with me. You know, said I don't think that friend is friend of hers. Any, you know, was, you know, she had a great opportunity, and her, you know, she blew it for a friend. You know, anyway,
I know.
Thank you, Jim, so much for being on the show, and keep on playing those Beatles songs for all the youngins and teaching them. You know,
I most certainly will. The luck I've had with trying to brag about me seeing the Beatles and having them walk by me, and then having these three other people just shut me down. I'm halfway expecting you, Jen, to say, well, listen, I didn't want to tell you this, but, you know, McCartney and I are really good friends. He comes over once a month for dinner or something like that.
Oh, I wish. No, I can honestly, okay. I have not had a close encounter with any Beatles. The closest I could say I got was when I saw his son, Jim, in concert, and I got him to sign his CD because he does small venues, you know, small little, like, you know, bars or coffee house kind of things and stuff like that. So, you know, he would stand around afterwards and sign things for people. But that's it. I mean, you know, if I'm going to have my McCartney, I talk about, you know, the possibility of having a McCartney, you know, experience sometime in the future while I talk to all these women who have been on stage with him. That's been, you know, why it's been so refreshing to have a guy on for a while, you know.
My niece lives in Winter Park, Florida, and she said that she was standing on a corner. Winter Park is, anyhow, she said she hears this guy with this British accent waiting across the street, and she goes, "Why, that voice sounds familiar." She turned around, it was Paul McCartney was standing there. He apparently, his grandson or someone was going to college in the area, and he built, of course, some kind of a great big condo unit for him to go to live in while he was attending college there. He would come and visit his grandson, and she said she hears this very familiar British voice. Yep. Turns out to be Paul McCartney. So yep. You never know.
You never know. If you want to hear a great story like that, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to episode number one. There's a story like that.
You know what? I'll do that right now. I'm on your site, and so as soon as we hang up, I'll be on episode number one.
Episode number one. And until then, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to episode number 42 of I Saw the Beatles. Talk to you all next week.